Maybe we should start by looking at the outline you sent, Louis.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay. Okay, so your suggestion is to leave the introduction as is.
Yeah, well, I guess I remember that I liked the introduction that we had. I guess we would have to change it according to whatever we have in the rest of the paper, right?
Hmm.
So,
the question is, do we need to have...
Or that we shouldn't change much, I think.
Hmm. Do you think any of the story goes into the introduction?
That's interesting. I don't know, maybe. But I didn't thought of that. Hold on a sec. Hold on.
Hmm. What do you think, Daniel? What do you think?
I'm not sure. Especially because Luis also embarked on a little bit of the story. He started with NFS.
He started with NFS?
Uh-huh. Which is actually what it happened, but...
Yeah, but I think... I think I prefer the story that you had... Jeez, where is that?
Okay, hello?
Hello.
Alright, sorry. Thing is that I'm actually at home.
Yeah.
Right now, I'm driving work. So.
Wow, okay. Do you want to call back when you get there? Or you have hands free?
No, it's fine. It's fine. I have...
Hands free?
Hands free, yeah.
Okay, good. Okay, so Louis, how is your storyline different than what Daniel had in his email?
Actually, I was looking into Daniel's outline,
yeah,
but I couldn't find it. So I just came up with that. And I don't know how different that from what Daniel has.
So Daniel's outline was in the email that...
I know.
That
but
was,
I couldn't find it.
It's in cs.fiu.edu, your CS account.
Yeah, I know. I looked there and I couldn't find it.
Okay.
I think one of the interesting things I came up with is this thing, it has been in my mind for a couple of months now, that is this thing called something like non-blocking write rate curve.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea is something similar like the MRC,
yeah,
right, in which you see the misses you have as you vary the memory size. But in this case, you will see is the non-blocking writes rate, right, as the memory varies. And actually, I was thinking that even at rate, we can calculate that curve for any kind of worker.
Given a memory trace?
No, given a...
file system trace.
A file system trace, exactly.
Yep. You're right.
So I think that's a good curve for motivation, given that I guess we want to motivate if non-blocking writes as a solution when you have constrained memory.
Hmm.
All right. So that's like, you know, that will show, you know, how good will be non-blocking writes as you decrease the memory size.
If we have a conventional miss rate curve and a non-blocking writes curve, that would also be very nice. The question is, where do we get file system traces from?
That I don't know. Yeah.
by the way, one thing related to that is the place that I have.
Okay.
I did not make much progress on the implementation, but one thing that I did was to try what I had on a real machine and using FileBench. Remembering the FileBench will try to do as much as it can in 15 seconds. While I was testing it, I boot up the machine with high memory constraint. I just put 128 megabytes of RAM. It panicked a lot, and I still haven't get to solve what is the problem with the machine when it tries to run FileBench. It will boot without problems, but when it tries running FileBench, start getting some bugs saying that the state of the pages is in bad state. They have certain flags that they shouldn't. But
this is with non-blocking writes.
With
non-blocking writes. Vanilla is fine.
Vanilla, I didn't try, but I think it's fine because he was fine before.
Hmm.
Now, one thing is that apart from that, the system start killing a lot of process because it's out of memory. Of course, this FileBench is going to create as it's going to do as much writes as it can.
So all the patches get created,
consuming the whole memory.
And this is with lazy or
with lazy?
With lazy.
Well, with this solution that is a schedule.
Okay, so.
But the thing with the schedule is that it will create 10,000 non-blocking writes before it starts flushing or something. It's really quick, in the sense of creating patches.
And it starts using.
It goes to a point
memory.
That takes all the memory. And the problem with the memory is that memory is not swappable, if I remember correctly, the memory for patches.
And FileBench, does it do 4K IOs or it does...
Well, I was using whatever required to configure, and as I remember, it was less than 4K, but it was something like 2K or something big, but not 4K. It was less than a page, so we can stress
2K, over 2K to 10,000 is how much is that?
That's
20 megabytes.
20 megabytes. I had 120. Yeah, but it does a lot. When it starts, it passes 1 or 2 seconds, and then all the panics and all the stuff start coming, and all the processes start dying. I did not look too much into what was the first panic, which is related to a bad memory, bad page state that actually occurred when it because now I remember the other thing that I did was okay, then since it's killing a lot of processes, let me boot again without the memory constraint. So I put 2 8 gigabytes or 2 gigabytes, whatever the machine has, and just remove the constraint. I run it again. It didn't kill any process because lack of memory, but the same errors of bad page state happened. And it was something related of the flags of the page when they were trying to delete the inode. I guess they were trying to delete the files of those pages. So something happened at that moment. They tried to delete the page. Maybe the pages were still under non-blocking writes. Some error happened. I don't know why that's happening, because all those pages should be locked. The delete should wait for all of that. But in that sense, that I haven't figured out and I still haven't looked into it. But the other problem with memory constraints, that the one that I wanted to bring, because we were talking about the administration curve, with this new solution, it can consume a lot of memory just with patches. And I don't know if to put a strict limit or if we should try to figure out something in order of those lines. Because if our solution will work with high memory, then it's limited to the first misses. Once the cache is populated, non-blocking write won't be triggered. If we want non-blocking write to get triggered continuously, we need to work with low memory. But if it's on this solution that actually we can create as many non-blocking writes as the application can, then we have the problem of the patches consuming more memory than the memory that will be allowed to bring the pages into memory to apply the patches. So I don't know if we need to try to think of a mechanism how to balance out this, or use just the hard limit that Luis, I think, implemented, but for Anonymous, I don't know if that will work for file system right away. We had a limit on the amount of memory for batches that we can spend.
Right. That's an interesting trade-off there, right? Which is that we need memory to store our batches. We need more memory to store our batches. And that means that, you know, the system should have abundant memory so that we can keep on creating as many batches as we need. But if the system has a lot of memory, then potentially the miss rate is not all that high. The non-blocking write miss rate is not all that high. So which means that there is no need to create batches.
Well, with our solution, we can, if we have abundant memory, infinite amount of memory, we're actually speeding up all the first misses.
Yeah.
But I don't know how beneficial is that in the long term.
Remember that we're looking at file system benchmarks, right? File system work, file system oriented workload. So there would always be some misses in typical file system workloads. Because if you have a lot, you know, some significantly large enough working set. I think as long as we do a memory sensitivity study for our workloads, I think it's still okay. Now, how do we deal with situations of low memory? In our solution itself, how do we deal with situations of low memory? I think that one way to deal with it is to place a limit like we already have for the anonymous. So place an upper limit on how much memory patches can consume.
As far as I understand, that limit, what it does is to stop any further non-blocking write.
Make it blocking.
Yes.
But that's...
But on lazy, that actually just leave a lot of stale patches and rolls back to vanilla. Because it will affect the future patches, not whatever was already there.
Mm-hmm. No, wait a minute.
I mean,
okay, let's talk about asynchronous first, right? And then we'll talk about scheduled and lazy. So in asynchronous...
Okay, asynchronous meaning there's no other thread to handle the non-blocking writes.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
So asynchronous means that the fetch gets dispatched and the process continues.
Yes.
Right? And... process can create more patches. So you have only one process. The patch memory limit is reached. The process cannot create any more patches, so it has to block. Right? So one way to do this is to elevate the priority of the page on which the process is blocked. For asynchronous, it's going to be difficult unless we have an I/O scheduler.
You mean the new page or the previous page where the batches are waiting to be applied?
New page.
Why?
Because all the other fetches are already issued to the I/O scheduler. It's asynchronous, right? We already issued all the fetches.
Okay.
So unless we change the I/O scheduler to recognize priorities, it's going to be difficult to elevate the priority of the blocking operation, blocking I/O. Right? So that's asynchronous. What else can we do with asynchronous? We would have to block for all the I/Os to be flushed out. So it's more like the bursty behavior. So the process creates a bunch of patches, then blocks for all those fetches to complete, and patches get applied, and then again a burst of patch creation and a block. So it's more of a...
Either way, async, which is the version before all of this was implemented, I don't remember that I was suffering of this problem, because async by itself starts blocking itself when it misses metadata. And since we're low memory, metadata should be also evicted eventually. Probably metadata helps to maintain.
But it's possible that metadata is cached. after the initial warm-up period. Because I remember that for async, the reason we were blocking on metadata was because the experiment was too short. And just the first metadata axes were blocking metadata axes.
Yes.
But if let's say the
experiment... What happened if there is high memory pressure? Shouldn't the metadata get evicted too?
After the data, all the data is evicted, the metadata would get evicted. Because the metadata reference counts are going to be higher than the data reference counts. There's a lot more data than metadata. Right?
But
and you have to go through metadata.
But I don't think you have to go to metadata every time. Once you have the page, you don't need to traverse the metadata.
That is true.
So I will expect the metadata gets evicted first. Eventually, the data gets evicted. And at that moment, bringing the data again requires to bring all the metadata again. I don't know if that is the case, but that's what I would expect.
Well, the metadata gets accessed for multiple data pages. Right. So the reference counts for metadata pages are going to be higher than data pages, potentially. Which is why I was saying data pages would get evicted first. But if data pages are being reused, then they would get to stay in the cache and metadata pages, because they're not being reused as much, they may get evicted. So this is a very interesting behavior, right? I mean, what's happening here is... if the metadata gets evicted and you don't care about metadata because you already had the database, then you won't block.
Unless you evict the data later on. Yes, to come back.
Yeah. So that is a very funny behavior there, which could potentially be another research project. But not for us.
Okay. That's my explanation why we say async. Maybe we didn't see this before or not that quickly, because this is really quick with a schedule, which is actually what I'm using. Lazy is a schedule right now. I don't have implementation for lazy. The schedule...
Let's think about it. You think still. But let's say that metadata is not an issue, right? How do we deal with the fact that there is bursty behavior? That the process creates a bunch of patches, then it blocks until they are all applied, and then it creates a burst of patches again, and it blocks for a long time until all those guys are applied. Is this the behavior that we expect?
That's what I would expect.
And is that okay?
That's what I would have wanted, actually.
That's probably okay, right? And we'll still do better than vanilla, because all these IOs are being done in parallel. So if we have NCQ in particular, then we could be better off. Even without NCQ, we can get a bunch of IO scheduler optimization with a disk, maybe even with SSD, I don't know. So with async, having a limit is fine. Right? If we, let's say, block the process, when the limit is reached, we'd still be okay. I do not anticipate us doing worse than vanilla, as long as we choose the limit carefully. Right?
Yes.
Now,
the limit should be a proportion of all available memory. I don't know if a page is 4K. Mm-hmm. Let's assume the worst case that each page just have 1 byte of patch. We should see how much space we need for this 1 byte. On the non-block and write page, the space and the space to allocate the patch. And what I'm trying to get is that we should always have enough space to allocate the pages where the patches are going to be applied.
I think the memory limit should be the sum of the patch memory plus the pages that are locked, because both are locked into memory for async.
Okay.
So that's the additional memory that this non-blocking writes is using. And we need to cap that additional memory use. So sum of the total patch size and the total pages that are locked waiting on the fetch.
You want to count the space of those pages as space of non-blocking writes.
Yeah, because it is used, because that's the extra memory that non-blocking writes adds to the system requirement. It adds.
Well, not really. Those pages will be there eventually in vanilla.
Right. They will be, but here is the thing is that in non-blocking writes, all of that requirement is occurring asynchronously, whereas with vanilla it's synchronous. And that's why I said locked pages, right, which are locked on fetch. I think
also in non-blocking writes, there is a bunch of metadata that doesn't exist in vanilla.
Yes.
Well, maybe we can ignore that, but I think at least the patch and the page memory, which I would guess would be the significant overhead, we should limit that. We should have a limit on that. Okay, so now let's move to scheduled.
And scheduled, it's even worse, because the problem with the scheduled is that the process can allocate thousands of non-blocking write pages without having allocated yet the actual page.
Which is good, right? Because now the memory requirement is less.
Yes, but the problem is that you have 10,000 patches and you consume more than half of the memory of the system, and then when you want to allocate those pages, you don't have a space.
So, which is why we had to cap the total amount of memory that is being used by patches and lock pages. I think with scheduled, we'll using the same limit, we'll allow more non-blocking writes to happen in parallel than async, because we don't allocate the page until we have to fetch it. So we don't cap the pages that are. Yeah, we need to make sure that our total memory overhead is limited. So the patch memory should potentially be, you know, you have more memory for creating patches because you're not locking a whole bunch of pages, allocating and locking a whole bunch of pages as well. The pages get allocated only when the fetch is initiated, right?
Yeah, but I think it's worse on schedule, because on async, even though, let's say that we don't put a limit, we allocate all the patches and the pages locked in the system, and we get to the limit of the memory. We cannot allocate anything more. But we already have those pages allocated, and we already have the fetch in progress. Eventually, the fetch will come, and the patches will be applied, and that memory will be free. On a schedule, since we are just creating patches and creating patches and creating patches, we can consume the whole memory with patches, and then we don't have a space to put the pages on.
Yeah, so we have to be careful about, maybe there are two limits there instead of just one limit. Dispatch memory and page memory.
But I think that's the problem that it faced. I just create the file bench, create just so many patches that it consumed all the memory that I had available.
Okay. But I think this solution of having limit on patch memory and limit on page memory would help, right? With separate limits.
With those limits,
whichever is reached, will block the process.
Would they be fixed for a given memory size, or?
I think they should be fixed for a given memory size, and they should be proportional to the available physical memory size. That makes sense. Than to have something static. I mean, if we, let's say, fix it up at 100 megabytes, or 10 megabytes, or patch memory and 20 megabytes for page memory, or some, these are just random numbers, they may not make sense, but let's say we have some numbers like that. I don't think we should use the same numbers for when you have 200 megabytes of physical memory versus 8 gigabytes of physical memory. I don't think it makes sense. It should be more of a percentage of the available physical memory.
If we had patch merge properly implemented, on the sense that we will never have two patches for the same page that contains data for the same byte of the page, then our limit should be different. Should be set on how many pages are non-blocking write, because.
Well, it's also patch, total patch size, right? Total size of the patch.
Yeah, but it will never be more than 4K.
And this is, I mean, I'm not talking about per page here. I'm talking about the total, all the patches across all the pages in the system. A limit on that number. That's what I'm talking about. Because that is what affects the memory available to the other processes.
Yeah.
So total patch memory across all the pages in the system, and total number of pages and total size of all the pages in the system, irrespective of which process, that are locked on a non-blocking write. So we need to have two separate limits on these two values, right? I think two limits make the solution a lot more flexible. And then the third one, which is async. Async, again, since we're separating out the patch memory limit, async would also be addressed, right? Because async cannot go ahead and create, just arbitrarily create patches.
With just limiting the amount of patches, isn't that enough?
The number of patches?
Yes.
Because patches are of different size, right? I think it's more robust if we just take the total amount of memory that the patches will consume than to just count the number of patches.
No, yes. What I meant is thinking that the total amount of memory consumed by the patches by itself isn't enough to address all the problem without having to count for the pages.
But the issue there is, you mean having a limit on the number of locked pages on non-blocking writes?
Not having that.
Well, the issue there is, let's say you have just, 8-byte patches. Everything is a unique page.
Okay, so the limit for the patches has to be really low.
Yeah. And then next you have really large patches.
Then you just can have one or two patches.
Then you can have only one or two outstanding non-blocking writes, right? So that's why I think that having these two independent would be better. Having these two limits independent.
So that's why now I remember why I was thinking that. If we had a solution where we can merge completely, we will expect that the amount of memory per page on patches will never be more than 4K.
Mm-hmm.
So then instead of limiting by the memory consumed by patches, we could limit the number of patches. Or number of pages with patches. And then we know that the amount of memory is less than the number of pages times 4K. Instead of using memory, we could use number of non-blocking write pages as our limit.
We could do that, except that the situation would be that the difference is memory, the limit of lower bound of non-blocking write memory and upper bound of non-blocking write memory is 2x. Right? So because you can have every page with just 1 byte of patch, or every page with the entire page minus 1 byte of patch. Those are the two possibilities.
Okay.
Right? And in those two possibilities, the lower, they define what is the lower bound on the amount of extra memory that non-blocking writes needs, and the upper bound.
Yes.
The lower bound, you have all the pages with some of the memory occupied by all the pages. And this is only for async. Right? Only for async. Because in async is where you immediately allocate the page. And you have only 1 byte of patch, then the limit is going to be reached with the page memory.
Yes.
Right? With one byte. But with, let's say, lazy, you're not allocating the page. So you can potentially support more patches, but you're not allowing the system to, because you have a bound on the number of pages with patches. And every page has only 1 byte patch in it.
Okay.
So then, but you block the process from creating more patches, although the total amount of memory overhead of non-blocking memory is very small. In fact, the gap can be 1 byte.
So you're saying that we're just using half of the memory?
Not even half. It's just 1 byte versus full page, right? So how much is that? 1/100th.
Yeah, but we need to reserve. In that case, we will be reserving half of the memory because, I mean, we already have half of the memory occupied eventually if all the pages came at the same time, right? If all the pages, all the fetches were processed at the same time, they will occupy half of the memory at the moment, right?
I see what you mean. Well, what we'll have to do is to also make the fetching process blocking process. Because it cannot fetch if it cannot allocate memory. It cannot allocate memory if the...
It's actually, I think that is what is happening. It tries to fetch, for that tries to allock the page, and since it seems that it's no memory, start killing processes. That's the explanation that I could give for what I saw.
I see. Okay, so you're saying that we could probably do with just a simple count on the number of pages that are unique pages that are doing non-blocking writes if we have patch merging.
Yes. If not, there is no way because we can have infinite amount of memory use on patches for just one page if they keep overwriting and it's not merged.
And we said that we're not going to do patch merging because it's complicated interval tree implementation.
A little bit, yes.
Yeah.
We can do what you propose with the two limits too. I think that should also work. Only thing is how to actually get those numbers. I guess I could see how much space is occupied by the non-blocking write page structs and the non-blocking write page and see certain.
The thing is that we cannot easily free up that memory. Let's say the system had a lot of memory and we said, okay, now the system has a lot of memory, let's allocate more patches. And then suddenly a new process started, which requires a lot of memory. We cannot reclaim the patch memory as quickly.
No.
Right? So we have to be, these numbers have to be conservative numbers.
Actually, that's another thing. Part of the problem also comes from me not implementing the pdflush thing. Because one of the mechanisms that Linux has is that when they reach certain threshold in memory, they start flushing all the dirty pages. So since I don't have that, patches don't get flushed. In another case, maybe it will block and start flushing non-blocking write pages if I implement that.
That's a good observation, yeah. Yeah, but I think even if we do that, and we need to do it, we still might need these two limits. I think I suspect it won't entirely address the problems that we have.
Yeah, it's
the pdflush. Yeah.
Okay. I don't want to distract more than from the discussion of the outline.
Yeah, outline. Okay, let's
but
go.
I just bring it because of the... I think that calculating the non-blocking write rate here will be challenging because of this. Memory patches change this curve because you consume more memory.
No, I don't think we're talking about that curve here. Here we are just talking about analytical... an analysis, given a memory trace,
curve change on the x-axis will be
memory size. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah,
but depending on memory size,
patch size affects, right?
That's so what you're talking about is overhead. I think here is only potential, which is as you decrease memory size, what is the potential of non-blocking writes? How many non-blocking writes can you do?
Assuming that we're not consuming any space or patches.
Yeah, assuming no overhead.
Okay.
Yeah, then that's an easier analysis. It's perhaps not as accurate, but I mean, if you define what you're doing and do it accurately, that's good enough, right? You're saying, okay, here is the potential for non-locking rights. These are the pages that you could, you know, that could be addressed, that could be handled using non-locking rights. Okay, so now let's talk about the traces. Where do we get traces from? We need file system traces for this.
And we have all the department one for the mail server and the...
They are block traces.
Oh. System traces.
I guess there are ways of getting the traces.
Yeah, okay. So Lewis, if you have any ideas, this is the time to speak up.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, I guess there are ways of getting the file system level traces, but I have never done that, so I don't know what exists or what not. But I think that's doable. I mean, that shouldn't be a big problem, right?
Hmm.
So...
No, I think the traces are a problem.
How come?
I don't know where to get them from.
Oh, I see. But you are thinking of getting some traces that already exist. I was saying, get our own traces.
Collect our own traces?
Yeah. Can we do that?
We don't have a tracing mechanism yet.
Let me see if there is something for Linux.
Is traces not enough? S-trace, I mean.
Huh?
S-trace shouldn't do this.
S-trace is only one process. I think we need full system.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, well, yeah. The worst case, for instance, this guy says that you can use SysNTAP. There's this guy that says that you use S-tray, but that would be for a single process, I guess.
Yeah. What SysNTAP? Where did you find it?
I just looked for file system. Linux file system traces.
Oh, with SysNTAP, you could put a probe on VFS write or VFS read, right?
I guess you could, but we don't have it. SysNTAP.
Yeah, I think that doesn't exist, at least for Linux. I think I once saw it for something else, but for Linux, I haven't seen anything like that.
Wait, but why is SysNTAP and putting a probe in VFS write? Isn't that just two or three lines of SysNTAP?
It is. It should be enough, but I guess it should be fine.
And the only issue with that is you don't have metadata.
You have all the parameters, so... VFS write.
I know, but you don't have metadata accesses.
And why do you need metadata accesses?
So that we can simulate what's in the cache. Because we're constructing an MRC, right?
True, but the only thing you need to know is what page of what file, right?
I know, but the thing is that there is an additional... We could ignore the metadata if that's what
okay.
You're suggesting. But there is
okay.
Additional pages in memory that are related to the metadata.
If you assume an FS, then
oh,
you
okay.
Don't have anything.
If you assume NFS, That is true.
So everything's on the summer.
Mm.
Also, I guess Aniel knows better, but isn't there a trace method for NFS?
I don't know about that.
Well, here is one. I found as someone wrote a script using SystemTap.
SystemTap, okay.
Yeah.
With NFS, what you can do is simply use Wartchart or TCP dump and you see the packet. That's how I did it, at least.
Okay.
But that those are not actual file system traces. Those are...
In Ethnia, there are traces for NFS, network file system traces, which is a protocol used by such network.
Yeah, I looked at this. Those guys have some traces too, Ethnia guys.
So I wonder if bad NFS traces have file system information.
I'm going to send you this. This link seems to have a bunch of useful stuff.
I don't know why they refer to NFS traces, but if it's the same trace that you see on Wirechart, they're just seeing NFS protocol operations. From those, you can get file system information, but it's not explicit. I mean, you can see the open, get attribute, operation, all of that, and sort of infer what was the operation, but it's not
well, open straightforward. Open read write doesn't have file offset, right? So you have to somehow get the file offset. I think that if you
open
reading
write on NFS, they do.
On NFS, they...
You need to specify what offset you want to... Right.
On NFS, yes. But I guess in the system call layer, you have to get the file offset from inside the kernel state using the data structure, the open file table or something like that. Or
you interpose from
seek. Exactly. That's the other possibility. I think it would probably be more robust to just get it from the in-memory. And then the metadata structures and memory. Okay, so I sent you something that has a bunch of different possibilities. That lists a bunch of different.
That's exactly the thread I was looking at.
Okay. So there are some system call traces here. Ivench traces and I think this Ivench traces. A file is not a file. Okay, there are some traces here that we could potentially use. Now the next question is, how do we need an LRU simulator to get the MRC?
That shouldn't be too hard.
We had Ricardo.
Ricardo has one, for instance, yeah.
Yeah. So the LRU simulator, and that's good enough, right?
Yeah, that should be good enough. The only modification we have to do to the simulator is that we can only do, we can run Mapsons only for write. And the other change is that if there is a write for the whole page, we don't count that as an additional non-blocking write. Right?
Yeah, I think we can ignore those corner cases.
The LRU simulator that we have is a block level LRU.
So block level LRU. And this, what we are doing is also block level.
How do we get the address from the call system phrase?
We have to map file name and offset into a page address.
Yeah, it should be just as simple as the address will have two parts.
Yeah.
The the offset of the file and some random number per file.
Yeah.
Okay. Don't we need the real address? No, right? We don't need to go in through the inode.
We don't. We don't. In the the only thing you need for calculating MRCs with methods is just identify different pages. That's it.
Yeah.
In any way, it doesn't matter what value do you have there.
Yeah. Yep.
So another thing I wanted to discuss is I was talking with Ricardo about this, and I think his only concern, I told him that we were targeting mainly file system, just file system implementation of the non-blocking rights.
Yeah.
And he said that he was concerned that we were going to get comments like, you know, we can do this on the user space, but you didn't even bother doing it in the kernel, something like that. So he gave me this example. Let's say that you know that you have with F-write, you have buffered writes. So I think we discussed this, by the way, some time ago. So what he thinks F-write is doing is that it's saving some memory in user space.
Hmm.
And when the process don't do a write with F-write, whatever is writing is going to that buffer.
Mm-hmm.
And the F-write doesn't need to get the page from kernel. Right?
Yeah.
So I guess that, you know, just that will kill non-blocking writes. But I guess what I'm saying is that we need to think why non-blocking writes is better than that. Right?
Well, F-write is just user space writing. Whereas,
that again?
F-write is just user space writing, whereas we register the write inside the kernel so that any other process can also see it.
I agree. So,
that's one
thing. What you're saying is that you would be forced to change your application to use a write, right?
No, I'm not saying that.
No.
I haven't said that yet. That was the next thing I was going to say.
Oh, okay. So
what
then what you're saying? What are you saying?
Writes made with F-write are only visible for that process or threads of that process. Any other application?
Oh, I see. That's true. That's actually true. Okay.
So if you have if you have inter-process communication, you cannot use an F-write. If you're synchronizing your reads and writes, then you cannot use F-write, but you can use non-blocking writes.
Okay.
The second thing is what you already said, which is that what did you say? That was
modify the application.
You have to modify the application to use F-write, whereas it's a seamless solution.
The third one I thought of, actually we thought of, that was Ricardo and me, is that one thing we can do that F-write cannot inside the kernel is that we can modify the I/O scheduler to optimize these I/Os in any way, right?
But also I think the F-write can... will probably have to block if you do an LSeq and F-write and you don't have metadata. I don't know how they do that.
That's probably not true because I think it doesn't. Actually, I was looking for that yesterday, the implementation of F-write. It's really messy, so I couldn't understand what they're doing. But based on what Ricardo is saying, when you have an F-write, you could just save that in user space, and you don't even have to talk to a kernel for a while until you're going to plug that.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
You just write that, save the metadata that you need when you're flushing that, and that's it.
Well, there is another thing that we never talk about. It's also is in the future work box left to the very long future, which is persistent patches that we hadn't to do in the future.
Yeah.
That is something that I think you couldn't do with F-write.
Yeah.
Having resilience to failure if you have persistent patches, though. I don't know if we can argue for something that we haven't implemented, but it's a door that is there. For F-Rite, I don't think it is.
I think F-Rite changes the durability properties that the VFS.
That's what I thought too. For instance, one thing, but you can also argue saying that maybe if the application is doing F-Rite, they don't care about the durability.
Which means that F-Rite solution in the first place would apply only to those applications. Cannot apply to every application.
Exactly. I see what you mean. So what you're saying is that if the application really cares about durability, then they better use non-blocking drives than F-Rite.
Yep.
So, you can think of a case where the application crashes using F-Rite on a non-blocking drive. In the case of non-blocking drive, whatever the application wrote, it stays in the buffer, while in the F-Rite it doesn't.
Oh, application. I was thinking full system, but yes, application is also possible to crash by itself.
Yeah. Yeah, but I'm glad we're talking about this because this needs to go into the related world.
Yeah.
So, Lewis, if you can update your related work from our good old related work to this new thing, then I think that would be more up to date.
Okay.
Because in the good old related work, we don't have a F-Rite discussion.
We don't.
Mm-hmm.
But I would also like to, because I'm not even sure how F-Rite works, because if that is the case, then it needs to do some complicated stuff. For instance, what happens if it buffers some write?
Mm-hmm.
And then the application reads some authentication of that page.
Read from patches, you mean?
No. I mean, I'm not even talking about non-blocking drives.
No, I mean, the equivalent.
F-Rite.
For F-Rite.
Yeah, so I'm sure it does the right thing.
So, right, but the thing is that it gets complicated when you buffer that way. Things get complicated. You need to think about merging and think about that stuff.
Sure. I think they do that. I mean, I would expect that the library does it.
Okay.
Otherwise, it won't be correct.
Why is it called F-Rite?
It's a file stream write.
Well, I mean, you can also think of F-Rite. If they don't do that, the advantage of F-Rite, let's say that they do read before write, okay? So when you do a write, they read the page and then it writes. The advantage of using a write over regular write is that all the writes you do at the end will end up in a single system call.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm saying is that maybe they are not implementing buffer write as we are thinking. Maybe what they are doing is what the kernel do but a user space so that it doesn't have to call the write system call too often.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds reasonable.
So my point is that we need to see what they do. For sure.
Yeah, I think we need to differentiate mainly the user level F-Rite implementation with non-blocking writes, and there are many many differences. I think he brought up at least 3 or 4.
Yeah.
So Lewis, if you can add one bullet for the related work with F-Rite and mention these differences, I think that would be helpful.
Okay.
And we eventually construct the related work. Or you could directly add it to the paper as well. Your choice.
Okay. No, I think I will say, I would like to have the
outline.
The layout as complete as possible with all the ideas we want, and then we can start off, with the paper.
One thing which I'm going to do is I'm going to forward to you Daniel's email so that you can look at the outline and integrate it with your current outline.
Okay.
Let me send that to you right now because I just have it in front of me.
Okay, sounds good.
Where should I send it to you?
To my FIU email is fine. I actually check that email all the time.
Okay. Updated outline for okay. I just sent it to you.
Okay, thanks.
Welcome. Okay. All right. What else should we talk about? Are we good for now?
I think so.
Well, Daniel, I guess you're continuing to troubleshoot.
Yes.
Well, you have two sets of issues, right? One is proxies getting killed, and the other is the kernel panics because it's running out of memory or something like that.
But flax on pages. Sure why is that happening. I don't know if it's related to the other problem or they're independent.
Do you have like a line of code in the kernel that where you get that or
no? It says that is when it's trying to free the pages on delete item. It seems to be triggered when deleting item.
Okay.
I just sort of look at the kernel trace.
Mm.
If I get too lost, I'll send an email with the trace.
Okay.
With the back trace.
Okay, sounds good. All right, so we meet same time next week?
Yeah,
sounds good.
All right, let's see. All right, thanks, Lewis.
Okay.
Bye.
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 Okay, we are done.
Yeah.
Now, out.